From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jennifer Canfield. Coming up this week, Arnie Fugelbog will spend less than 6 months in prison for his fishing crime. Southeast Native groups support trimming the sea otter population, but are concerned about some of the planned ramifications. And the start dates for two crab fisheries will remain flexible. All that, and should seats on the North Pacific Council be dedicated to sports fishing? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's former fisheries advisor will be going to federal prison for 5 months. Arnie Fugelbog was sentenced in federal court on Tuesday. The former North Pacific Fishery Management Council member pleaded guilty in August to illegal fishing. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports from Anchorage.
Arnie Fugelbog sat quietly, almost meekly, before Judge H. Russell Holland to hear his sentencing. Fugelbog had pleaded guilty to one count of a Class A misdemeanor violation of the Lacey Act. The plea deal with federal attorneys could have gotten him a 10-month sentence, but both federal attorney Ani Stewart and Fugelbog's counsel Jeff Feldman had asked the court for a lesser sentence. Judge Holland said any monetary gain by Fugelbog was overshadowed by the damage done to public perception of the ethics of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Holland said, quote, Mr. Fugelbog was in a position of responsibility and influence and has damaged the North Pacific Fishery Management Council more than damaged any environmental resources. Ani Stewart, assistant U.S. attorney, said she's satisfied with the sentence. She had asked that the courtroom be cleared when Judge Holland asked her why she had requested a lighter prison term. Holland would not clear the court, and Stewart would only say that Fugelbog was still cooperating with authorities on another case that is not finished yet.
His cooperation is still ongoing at this time.
Fugelbog's attorney, Jeff Feldman, told the court his client's remorse is sincere. Stewart remarked that the sentence is fair and just.
I think Mr. Fugelbog is sincerely upset by the situation he finds himself now and has no one to blame but himself. I think it's a very far fall to go from a fisheries aide to a senator to someone who's going to be serving time at a federal penitentiary, and I do think he is sincerely regretful for the choices he made that have landed him in that situation.
The fishing violations Fugelbog pled guilty to spanned several years, although the charge and plea agreement focus on Fugelbog's 2005 violations aboard one vessel, when he doubled his quota in one reporting area by reporting fishing in a different area. In comments to the court, Fugelbog's voice broke when he told the judge, quote, I am deeply sorry for actions that burdened the agencies I had vowed to serve. Stewart says the sentence needs to be a deterrent to others. Otherwise, the system won't work. She says it was a serious offense.
It went on for a long period of time, from at least 2001 to 2006. And the defendant tried to frame it in terms of just a time savings and not the motivation not being necessarily money. But the government believes that time is money in the fishing industry, and that not only was Mr. Fugelbog saving time when he cut corners and falsely reported where he caught fish, but that did equate to him, you know, having a gain in money as well.
Fugelbog attorney Feldman would not comment after the proceeding, saying only that it is not clear yet when Fugelbog will have to report to prison. Fugelbog also declined to comment. As part of the terms, Fugelbog will pay a $50,000 fine and a $100,000 community service payment. The defendant will also be required to place an ad in the National Fisherman alerting others to his circumstances. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Several Alaska Native organizations oppose parts of a legislative measure backing more sea otter harvests, but they support efforts to get Alaskans more involved in federal management of the once-rare marine mammals. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Sea otters were almost wiped out by Russian and American hunters, but they've been reintroduced to Southeast and are expanding in number and range. Crabbers and divers say the voracious animals are decimating populations of crab and other shellfish they gather for commercial or subsistence use. Alaska Natives are allowed to hunt otters, but face strict federal limits on how they are used. Full pelts can be sold to other natives. Traditional products, such as clothing or regalia, can be sold to anyone. Representative Peggy Wilson, a Wrangell Republican, authored the legislative resolution asking federal authorities to work with state and native leaders to allow more hunts.
We're hoping that the natives can do what they traditionally have done for years, and that they can be able to harvest them, use their skins to make other things so that they can make money. And if we just keep it to them, we're not going to over-harvest by any means of the imagination.
Wilson's resolution supports allowing whole pelts to be sold to non-natives, which is now illegal. She recently told the House Resources Committee that would boost harvests and lessen impacts on fisheries. Tlingit-Haida Central Council President Ed Thomas says the change could create problems.
The biggest threat is that if we were allowed to sell those pelts unaltered, you can pretty much guess, if you look down here on South Franklin, that they would come back as authentic native crafts made in Taiwan.
Thomas supports other parts of the resolution calling for a new federal management plan that increases otter harvests. So does Rosita Worrell, who spoke on behalf of the Alaska Federation of Natives, Sea Alaska Corporation, and the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Sea Alaska and tribal governments in Sitka and Petersburg are among those trying to expand pelt processing.
We see sea otters as just one answer to try to promote sustainable economies in our communities.
She says the current law is interpreted too narrowly. She wants native craftspeople to be able to make and sell a wider variety of otter products, such as teddy bears.
We have a number of our people that have been cited. We've complained vigorously about the enforcement practices. We have advanced ideas of co-management. But our idea really was to change the marine mammal law that would allow for the sale of contemporary items.
House Joint Resolution 26 was introduced last year. Its first hearing was February 3rd in the House Resources Committee. It remains before that panel. If passed, it will be sent to Alaska's congressional delegation and the Secretary of the Federal Department of the Interior. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Two Southeast commercial crab fisheries that start up later this month will keep a flexible start date in future years. The state's Board of Fisheries last month voted down proposals to change to a fixed February starting date for Tanner and Golden King crab fishing. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki has more.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game submitted a proposal seeking to go back to a fixed starting date for both crab fisheries. Since 2005, the start of the seasons have been set in February, but have been flexible based on tides and weather. Board member Bill Brown of Juneau summed up discussion from committee work.
An industry would like a fixed start date so they can organize their marketing procedure, and I do understand that. But the fishermen are concerned about safety, about losing pots and stuff, and the fishermen want to have not a fixed start date, but a start date based on tides, Mr. Chair.
The starting date in the past 6 years has ranged from February 10th through the 18th based on input from industry and weather delays. Fish and Game's Forrest Bowers said the fixed start date would eliminate negotiations with industry over the best date.
We are able to very simply implement a regulation with a fixed start date. We can also simply implement a regulation that's based on the lowest, you know, tidal range. It's a simple exercise to read the tide book and determine that. But where the difficulty has occurred is when we've attempted to accommodate input from the industry on what that lowest Juno tidal range really means.
Board members did not support the fixed starting date. Vince Webster of King Salmon wanted a movable start to allow for tides and weather.
I think the department was trying to please everyone, and they got frustrated. So they said, let's just make a fixed date. And if this goes away, I think the department just needs to go back and do exactly what the regulation says and not try to please everyone. And they can put the blame on us.
The board unanimously voted down that fixed start date of February 15th. They were also unanimous in their support for new language that spells out weather conditions that could delay the season. That was also a department-submitted proposal following several weather delays over the past 4 years. Proposed language allowed for a delay with forecast of gale force winds. Petersburg Vessel Owners Association suggested including freezing spray warnings as criteria as well. Board Member Webster said committee participants had disagreements over the bad weather that could trigger a closure.
The reason no one can agree on the wind speed is because we have different size boats out there. I mean, people have invested big money so they can go out in bad weather. Do we want to make this an equal opportunity, not based on investment, not based on the amount of work that goes into the fishery? I'm not a big fan of that. I think this is a compromise. It takes safety in consideration.
The board unanimously approved regulation language that allows for a delay with gale force wind warnings of 35 knots and higher. And the board voted down a pot limit reduction for both the crab seasons. This year's Tanner and Golden King crab fisheries both start up February 16th. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicky.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The State House Special Committee on Fisheries has forwarded a resolution to the House Rules Committee that would designate seats on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council to sport and subsistence interests. House Concurrent Resolution 13 would not carry the weight of a bill, but would send a message to the governor. Fairbanks Representative Steve Thompson is the chair of the Fisheries Committee. In his sponsor statement, he says sports fishing and subsistence users have expressed frustration at the lack of opportunity to meaningfully participate in the North Pacific Council process and a lack of representation of their interests on the council. He says actions taken by the council regulating commercial fishing directly affect the quantity of fish available for sports fishermen and subsistence users. Kodiak Representative Alan Osterman also sits on the Fisheries Committee. He had no recommendation on the resolution, while his four colleagues voted to move it out of committee. He said it's not unusual for governors to nominate sport and subsistence representatives to the council.
Governors have made several efforts over time to appoint sport fish people, such as Bob Penny was appointed. They made an effort to get Ben Ellis on there at one point in time from the sport fish side. We've had Eric Olson from the CDQ groups, Native Corporations, has sat on the North Pacific Council for quite a long time. So while some people think that there need to be a designated seat, I don't necessarily agree with it. I don't know exactly how I'm going to vote yet, depending on whether there's any changes to it by the time it gets to the floor.
Dillingham Representative Bryce Edgman pointed out that while the governor submits names for the North Pacific Council, it is ultimately the U.S. Secretary of Commerce who makes the final appointment. He said he has constituents on both sides of the issue.
I was at the Alaska Federation of Natives when they passed a resolution essentially supporting something similar to this. It's a very controversial issue, and you have supporters and you have detractors. It's a resolution, so it's not a bill that would, you know, put anything in the statute, make ironclad changes, should have passed the legislature.
The Alaska governor nominates five public members to the 11-member council, while Washington State appoints two. The four other seats are designated to the Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner, Alaska Regional Administrator for NOAA, and Washington and Oregon state fishery officials. The House Rules Committee will now schedule House Concurrent Resolution 13 for hearings in other state House committees.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KSKA's Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, KFSK's Joe Vicknicky in Petersburg, and KMXT's Jay Barrett in Kodiak. Also in Kodiak, I'm Jennifer Canfield.